Hey, this is Dr. Eric, and I just want to let you know about my gut healing bundle for those with thyroid and autoimmune thyroid conditions. This includes SMT Probio, which is a probiotic with 18 well-researched strains, Enzymes Plus, which not only includes digestive enzymes, but betaine HCl and ox bile, and SMT GI Restore, which is a stevia-free formulation that has multiple nutrients and herbs that have been proven to help support the healing of the gut. To learn more about this, you can visit guthealingbundle.com. Hey, this is Dr. Eric, and in this Q&A episode, I am going to answer multiple questions related to thyroid health. I try to do this every few months, and while I wish I can answer all the questions sent to me, I choose questions that I think can benefit a lot of people with thyroid and autoimmune thyroid conditions. While a few of the questions are specific to hyperthyroidism and Hashimoto's, many of the questions relate to those with any thyroid or autoimmune thyroid condition. Also, we had a few questions from those who have already received radioactive iodine or thyroid surgery, and while the goal of the podcast is, of course, to try to help people save their thyroid and avoid these treatment options, towards the end of the episode, I am going to respond to a few of these questions. And one of the main reasons why I'm going to do this is so that if there is anyone who is on the fence about receiving radioactive iodine or thyroid surgery, you can see some of the concerns these people have after receiving these treatments. So let's go ahead and start with the first question. And the first question is, what can be used to reduce goiter in hyperthyroidism? So goiter, this is an enlargement of the thyroid gland or a swelling of the thyroid gland. And there could be numerous causes of a goiter. And I do have a separate podcast episode related to goiter. And I'll put the links to certain episodes related to some of the questions, and that'll save me some time just because you could just go ahead and listen to the episode, or if I have an article on my website, naturalendocrinesolutions.com, this way you could just refer to the article. So either way, I'll say briefly, when it comes to a goiter, you want to address the cause of the goiter. And if someone has hyperthyroidism, many times the hyperthyroidism itself is causing a goiter. And that was the case with me when I dealt with hyperthyroidism. I had a mild goiter. It wasn't a severe goiter, but it was bad to the point where certain supplements would get lodged in my throat, mainly fish oils, not all the time, but sometimes, which is pretty scary. And so I did have some issues swallowing. I didn't have any obstruction as far as breathing, but the hyperthyroidism in my case was causing a goiter. And as my thyroid hormone levels decreased and eventually normalized, the goiter eventually resolved. Now, some people that have a really severe goiter, and in that case, I'm not saying that they can't get some decrease in size and sometimes a significant decrease, but everybody's different. And if it's really severe, sometimes it's not going to decrease significantly and many times won't go back to normal if it's really big. And when I say really, really large, really big, if it's something that everyone else notices, it's pretty obvious, then to me, that's pretty large. If it's something where most people don't notice, and again, you might notice it because you're looking at your body every single day, but in that case, usually there's greater hope. So it really depends on the person, but similar with thyroid nodules, insulin resistance can cause a goiter or be a factor with a goiter. Problems with estrogen metabolism could be an issue or a factor in a goiter, as well as thyroid nodules, inflammation itself. But like I said, in the case of hyperthyroidism, you definitely want to address the cause of the hyperthyroidism, or at the very least do things to lower the thyroid hormone levels and then hopefully also address the cause of the problem. So this next question, I have been on thyroid medication for 20 plus years. I have never been told I had Hashimoto's. I have hypothyroidism unspecified. And so the question is, does hypothyroidism ever not require lifelong medication? It really depends on the situation. And that might be a frustrating response because that will be my answer to a number of these questions. It depends. It depends on the person, the situation. So, I mean, first of all, you mentioned lifelong medication. I realize a lot of people with hypothyroidism, including many people with Hashimoto's, are told to take thyroid hormone replacement permanently. Some of these people, without question, might need some thyroid hormone replacement on a temporary basis. And I'm not saying there's not a time and place for long-term thyroid hormone replacement, but you want to address the cause of the problem. And that's the big issue with most medical doctors, including most endocrinologists, is when a patient comes in with hypothyroidism, they're not doing anything to address the cause of the problem. They're just running a blood test. And then if the TSH is high, the thyroid stimulating hormone is high, and or the thyroid hormone levels are low or on the lower side. Again, many times they won't even look at the thyroid hormone. They might just do the TSH or maybe a TSH and free T4. Regardless of what the thyroid hormones show, if someone has an elevated TSH, frequently they will recommend thyroid hormone replacements. And many times the person will be put on that indefinitely and lifelong. But if the cause of the problem is addressed, the person might not need to be on thyroid hormone at all, or they might need to be on it for a period of time. It could be months. I mean, sometimes a person's on for a number of years and they're able to get off. So like I said, it depends on the situation. But the answer to the question is yes, there are situations where people do not require lifelong medication. I will say with Hashimoto's, a lot of these cases are subclinical where the TSH is elevated, yet the thyroid hormones are within the lab range, but not within the optimal range. But again, most doctors will go by the TSH. And so even if the thyroid hormones are not looking too bad, and if the person's not feeling too bad, they might still give the person thyroid hormone. On the other hand, let's say if a situation arises where the TSH is on the higher side, but still within the range, within the lab range, but not optimal, and the thyroid hormone levels aren't looking too bad, but the person is very symptomatic. They're experiencing fatigue and coldness and weight gain. Again, it depends on the practitioner, but a lot of practitioners would give thyroid hormone. Some wouldn't. Some would just say, well, TSH looks good, so we're not doing anything. But this case also, you want to try to address the cause of the problem. I mean, regardless of the situation, you want to address the cause of the problem. And unfortunately, like I mentioned earlier, many medical doctors don't do that. Some functional medicine practitioners don't do that either. In the case where TSH is within range, but maybe not optimal and the person's symptomatic, they might say, well, let's give a trial of thyroid hormone replacement. And the person takes it, maybe they feel better, and then they just keep them on that. And maybe they'll do some other things to improve adrenals and gut health, but not really dig deep enough to address the cause of the problem. So again, the answer is yes, but I wanted to give an explanation behind that. So next question is from Maddie, freshly diagnosed at Graves at 22, and she just bought my book. Thank you so much, Maddie. I appreciate that. And her question is related to hair loss. And actually, the next few questions related to hair loss. I decided for some of these topics to group them together. So Maddie asked, do people with Graves' disease suffer total hair loss, or is it super common? And is there a way to avoid it or fix it? Most people with Graves don't suffer total hair loss. Recently, coincidentally, I have a patient who does have alopecia areata, and actually alopecia universalis, I think it's called, where she's not only lost all hair on her head, but like all body hair. And again, that's not common. Every now and then I see a patient with that. Now, hair loss itself is very common with hyperthyroidism, including Graves' disease. And many times it is extreme, but it does depend on the person. Some people don't experience severe hair loss. And again, when you say total hair loss, even alopecia areata, like just maybe where it doesn't affect other areas of the body, but just the head, I can't say most people with hyperthyroidism experience total hair loss. Now, in some cases, it might seem that way or close to that, where I have a patient, they're like, well, I've lost 80% of my hair. And so it almost seems like total hair loss. Again, I'm not trying to minimize that. That's still very distressful. The good news with the hair loss, usually it does stop and grow back. If there's a situation like alopecia areata, alopecia universalis, I mean, there's still hope, but that does present with other challenges because, again, those are other autoimmune conditions. And that's the thing. When you have one autoimmune condition, you are at greater risk of developing another autoimmune condition. And so Barbara has the next question, which is related to hypothyroidism and hair loss. So why does hypothyroidism cause hair thinning, hair loss? What could be done to help besides taking thyroid meds? And so I just mentioned hyperthyroidism, hair loss is common. Really, any type of thyroid hormone imbalance can cause hair loss, hair thinning. I do see it more commonly in my hyperthyroid patients, and it could be because I see more people with hyperthyroidism than hypo. I mean, I do see a good number of people with hypothyroidism Hashimoto's, but because of my personal experience with Graves' disease, and just because there's not a lot of practitioners out there who see people with hyperthyroidism, I see more people with hyperthyroidism than I do with hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's. But even when comparing the two, I would say that hair loss seems to be more severe in those with hyperthyroidism, but also can be an issue with people with hypothyroidism as well. So the thyroid hormone imbalance, again, there could be other factors too. Certain nutrients can play a role, such as if someone has a deficiency in zinc or selenium or iron, that could be a factor. And that could also relate to the gut. If someone has an unhealthy gut, that could increase the chances of them having nutrient deficiencies. There could be other factors. So Julie Olson has been on my podcast to talk about hair loss. So that's an episode that you might want to check out. Again, I will link to that episode in the show notes or pass it over to the person who creates the show notes for me. And like I said, with some of these other episodes too, just if there's an episode on the podcast or an article, I'll try to remember to have it included in the show notes so you could refer to that, because there's definitely a lot more information presented during these episodes or again, when creating an article, but just want to give some information to get started. But I definitely would check out the podcast episode and or any articles on my website, naturalendocrinesolutions.com. And then the final question relates to hair loss by Julie. So my question is, why does my hair grow so much slower after a single bout of hyperthyroidism? It's been over 3 years since dealing with hyperthyroidism and my hair grows slower than it ever has in my whole life. I have a meticulously clean diet and I take meticulous care of myself. I commonly see hair loss. I can't say that most people, at least the ones that I work with, complain about it growing back much slower. I mean, as far as a period of years, I mean, they might lose a lot of hair and then it might take a few months to get things in balance before the hair starts growing back. And again, I'm not saying it's a quick process with the hair growing back, but usually it's not a few years. I'm not exactly sure why. You said it's been 3 years since dealing with hyperthyroidism and your hair grows slower than it ever has in your whole life. But I would just say to address the potential causes of hair loss, I wish I could say that I could give a recommendation, do this and it'll accelerate your hair growth. But again, you could tune into the podcast episode and our articles related to hyperthyroidism. And yeah, so I would make sure that the thyroid hormone is in balance, which it sounds like it may be. Make sure you have a healthy gut, correct any nutrient deficiencies, the sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone also could play a role. So really you might need to address other areas as well. Maybe the thyroid hormone has been in balance, but some of these other areas haven't been addressed and need to be addressed. All right. So the next few questions relate to nodules. So this question, I have two small nodules on one side of my thyroid and I'm scheduled to go back in November for a yearly checkup. I occasionally get anxiety flare-ups, feelings. My question is, do nodules grow even with proper diet? So they can. They can grow even if someone's eating a healthy diet. And some people, of course, might think that they're eating a healthy diet, but they're not. But there could be numerous reasons why someone develops thyroid nodules. And again, I've covered this on my podcast. I've had Dr. Angela Mazza, who spoke about nodules, and also have some articles on my website, naturalendocrinesolutions.com. And so I mentioned earlier with goiter and nodules, you could have problems with insulin resistance, problems with estrogen metabolism, inflammation could be a factor. Iodine is controversial, but in some cases, iodine deficiency could be a factor with nodules. And also, I should mention a goiter, but then in some people, iodine could actually worsen nodules. So my point is, if someone's eating healthy, you could still have some of these other factors, other problems. Now, as far as insulin resistance, if someone's eating healthy and they have been for a long time, then maybe that's not a factor, because if they're eating healthy, you're less likely to develop insulin resistance. But also, it could be where someone had already insulin resistance and then they clean up their diet and there's an inflammatory process with insulin resistance. So sometimes eating well alone won't address that, won't resolve that issue. So, but the answer is yes, nodules can grow even when eating healthy because it's not all related to diet. Eating a healthy diet, of course, is very important, but there could be other factors. And then the next question related to nodules, I've had Graves' disease for about 13 years. My blood work shows normal right now, but a recent ultrasound shows nodules and a goiter, which the doctor says needs to be removed. Is it possible to shrink nodules and a goiter? So I mentioned the goiter. And then, yeah, with nodules too, if you address the cause of the problem, whether it's problems with insulin resistance or problems with estrogen metabolism or other issues that I discuss and have discussed in my podcast and or my website and articles, blog posts, and then everyone's different. So again, just one of those things where it does depend on the person. I'm not saying everybody who has thyroid nodules could have them like the point where they're no longer on an ultrasound. And that's really the only way to know if they are decreasing is to do a follow-up ultrasound, let's say 6 months to 12 months later, and just monitor the situation. So the answer is many times yes. And then I mentioned Dr. Angela Mazza. She's been on the podcast and she spoke about radiofrequency ablation, which again is not the same as some people confuse that with radioactive iodine. I don't recommend radioactive iodine. And radiofrequency ablation, it's not like I recommend that for most cases of thyroid nodules, but if someone has a larger thyroid nodule or multiple nodules that are larger, again, I still recommend trying to address the cause of the problem, but radiofrequency ablation has the ability to just get rid of the nodule individually and also save your thyroid. Because again, many doctors will just say, let's remove the whole thyroid, or maybe sometimes do a partial thyroidectomy. So radiofrequency ablation has the ability to save the thyroid by just targeting the specific nodule. All right, so let's go ahead and actually another question by Karen. Karen has a question about thyroid nodules, actually the cold one. So I will read this, that ask about thyroid nodules, the cold thyroid nodules, because they're hot and cold nodules. Can they be treated without an operation? Is there any natural other treatment supposed to shrink them? And she mentioned, I tried the castor oil packs, but sadly with no reaction, the nodules are still growing. I also have a very high thyroglobulin level. And the answer is yes. So even if it's cold, whether it's cold or hot nodules, it doesn't make a difference. I know the literature, I think, shows that cold nodules, I don't even know if it's in the literature, but cold nodules supposedly have a greater risk of being malignant, but it's still such a small, like 5%, maybe less than that. So it doesn't mean that cold nodules can't be decreased in size. So whether or not it's cold or a hot nodule, it doesn't really make a difference. You want to address the cause of the problem, and it is possible to shrink the thyroid nodules. So let's move on to a different type of question. This is from Terry, who's in Mississippi. So my hands itch and scratching them creates sores. My back gets rashes and itches my arms and knees as well. The endocrinologist says I have Hashimoto's for about 30 years. So many illnesses, yet this undetected and the root of all of them. I'm just not sure about the skin issues. Is that actually Hashimoto's? So skin issues usually are gut issues. This isn't just coming from me. I interviewed on the podcast Dr. Julie Greenberg, and she is a naturopathic dermatologist, and she spoke about how most skin issues, if not all skin issues, are linked to the gut microbiome. So when someone is having these kind of issues, whether it's itching or eczema, all acne, other types of skin issues, then you really want to try to focus on the gut. So you might need to do some testing, maybe work with a functional medicine practitioner to do some type of comprehensive stool test. And of course, diet plays a role when it comes to the gut. It's not just all about parasites and H. pylori and gut infections. So just optimizing your gut alone sometimes will play a big role in restoring the health of the gut. So definitely want to do things to eat a healthy diet. Some people, it's not a matter of infections, but it's overgrowth. So candida is normal in the gut, but you don't want too much candida. Sometimes they just have a lot of low good flora in the gut, good bacteria. But either way, it's not necessarily directly related to Hashimoto's, but again, Hashimoto's is an autoimmune condition and most of the immune system cells are located in the gut. So you definitely want to have a healthy gut when dealing really with any condition, but definitely with autoimmune conditions such as Hashimoto's as well as with Graves' disease. So Rudo has a question. I would like to know, what can I do to stop the sweating? I have a challenge here in Africa. It's always very hot if I'm exposed to a bit of heat. I sweat a lot and sometimes I have problems breathing properly. So I'm not sure because you didn't put it down here, but I'm thinking you might have hyperthyroidism. With hyperthyroidism, very common for people to sweat, or more common when compared to hypothyroidism. And so you want to balance the thyroid hormone levels. Now, there could be an issue with the parasympathetic nervous system, an imbalance in the parasympathetic nervous system that could cause problems with sweating. That could also cause problems with people who are unable to sweat. Like they might go into a sauna for 30 minutes and not sweat. So you could also look into the parasympathetic nervous system, maybe incorporate some vagus nerve exercises, which I don't know if I mentioned in a podcast episode, I might have, but I know I have an article where I discuss the vagus nerve and exercises. So that's something you might want to check out. Next question, what can you do to get rid of the dry skin that comes with Graves' disease? So, I mean, not everybody with Graves has dry skin, but it's pretty common in those with both Graves and Hashimoto's, even those with non-autoimmune thyroid conditions. So what dryness, I mean, definitely want to make sure you're well hydrated. So drinking plenty of water, at least half of your weight in ounces. So for example, someone weighs 120 pounds, at least 60 ounces of water per day. Omega-3 fatty acids also can help a lot. And a lot of people are deficient. If you're not eating fish at least a few times a week or taking a fish oil, you're probably deficient in omega-3s. And you could confirm that by running an omega-3 fatty acid panel or even an omega-3 index. But I see it all the time where if someone is not taking fish oils or eating fish, then they're deficient. Many times with my patients, I'm just recommending omega-3s because I know from their diet they're not eating enough. And if they're not taking an omega-3 supplement, then they're probably deficient. And I've seen that when people do test. I can't say I have everybody that I work with run an omega-3 fatty acid test. I give it as an option and not everybody takes that option. But when I do run the test, most people are deficient, unless if they are supplementing or eating fish, I'd say at least three times a week. And that's a little bit of a catch-22 because the toxins in fish, I do recommend having some seafood. I think it's okay. I mean, some are concerned about the iodine too, which for those with hyperthyroidism, I do talk about that in my book, The Hyperthyroid Healing Diet. So I get into greater detail when it comes to seafood for those who are concerned about the iodine. And I talk about the toxins too. But point of answering this question is that an omega-3 deficiency can cause dry skin. Next question is from Suzanne. So I still keep needing to up my thyroid medication. I don't seem to stabilize and I don't know why. So Suzanne looks like she's dealing with hypothyroidism. She said she's up to 3.25 grains now. Why is it not working even though I follow the advice and wait after taking an empty stomach for an hour before I eat or drink? So yeah, it does sound like you're following the directions that you want to take thyroid hormone replacement on an empty stomach, but you keep on needing to increase the dosage. And in all likelihood, the reason for that is because you're not addressing a cause of the problem. And everybody's different. So there are some people with, let's say, Hashimoto's, maybe even non-autoimmune hypothyroidism, and they've been on the same dosage of thyroid hormone replacement for quite a long time. But in the case of, again, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, you have a damaged immune system taking place. And usually that damage is going to get worse. The damage to the thyroid is going to get worse over the years. And so if nothing is done to address the cause of the problem, then over time, it's very common for the person to need to increase their dose of thyroid hormone replacement, which of course is done by the prescribing doctor just based on the test. Usually, again, TSH, they'll look at TSH, and TSH increases, then they'll increase the dose of the medication or the thyroid hormone replacement. And then nothing's done to address the cause of the problem because they usually aren't going to do anything to address the cause of the problem. But if you do things to address the cause of the problem, first of all, there's a chance maybe you won't need as much thyroid hormone replacement, or in some cases, the person might be able to, over time, get off of the thyroid hormone replacement. Again, I'm not recommending for anybody to stop it, but that's just the truth that some people can get off of it. But you need to address the cause of the problem. And at the very least, you would hope that by addressing the cause of the problem, that you would stop further damage from taking place where you don't have to increase it. So again, there are some people that need to be on thyroid hormone replacement long term. But as I mentioned already, you want to address the cause of the problem. Next question, does Graves' disease affect your teeth? So it does seem that hyperthyroidism does have a greater impact on the teeth where we see more cavities in patients. Again, I'm not a dentist, of course, but just people reporting to me. I'd say on average, that's not the case. Most people aren't saying that it's affecting their teeth, but hyperthyroidism does affect the bone density in a negative way. And hypothyroidism, not having enough thyroid hormone also, I mean, it affects more the bone quality, but either way, if you have hypothyroidisms, including Hashimoto's, Graves' disease, it can have an impact potentially on your teeth. Again, I see it more in my hyperthyroid patients. Might also have an impact in some cases on the gums as well. And I always recommend working with a biological dentist if you have one that's not too far away and you could afford one, because they are pricier, just like a functional medicine doctor. Many times it costs more than seeing a medical doctor. But I've been working with a biological dentist for quite a long time. And a biological dentist is not exactly the same as a holistic dentist. There are holistic dentists that pretty much, if a dentist is recommending root canals, and again, I'm not going to talk much about this, but there was controversy with root canals. And so if a holistic dentist recommends root canals, they're, I mean, arguably, maybe not even a holistic dentist, but definitely not a biological dentist. And I'm talking from self-experience, because I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, or right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And years ago, I saw a holistic dentist who was recommending a root canal, and also other things like fluoride treatments, which typically a biological dentist isn't going to recommend. So it's not to say that a non-biological dentist, like just even a conventional dentist, can't give you good care, because they definitely can. But just like a functional medicine doctor is going to try to address the cause of the problem, a biological dentist is going to focus on your teeth, of course, but also will look at other areas of the body and not just the teeth. And that's really what you want, like a whole body approach. This next question is, how can a person test positive for Graves and Hashimoto's at the same time? Apparently, that is me and I'm trying to use natural remedies, but I don't know which direction to go. So again, I have at least one podcast episode that talks about this, and I'm sure one or more articles that I've written in the past. But it's actually quite common to test positive for the antibodies for Graves and Hashimoto's. It doesn't mean that you're hyper and hypo. So when you say you don't know which direction to go, just keep in mind that both Graves and Hashimoto's are autoimmune conditions. So really, there's a lot of overlap when it comes to treating any autoimmune condition. I mean, there are some differences, but the biggest difference with Graves and Hashimoto's is that most people with Graves have hyperthyroidism and thus need antithyroid medication or natural antithyroid agents such as bugleweed, whereas with Hashimoto's, many of these people are on thyroid hormone. So the symptom management aspect differs, but they're both immune system conditions. So whether someone has the antibodies for Graves, Hashimoto's, or both, you still want to do things to improve the immune system. You want to do things to find and remove triggers, as well as heal the gut, correct other underlying imbalances. So this next question, how do you know if your thyroid is operating in a good range? How important are serum values versus symptoms? And if symptoms, how do you assess them? And this is from Mary. I do like blood testing. I mean, blood tests aren't perfect, but there's a difference between optimal and lab reference ranges. So for example, TSH, I would say optimal is between 1 and 1.5. We could even make the argument between 1 and 2. For some people, maybe like 1.7 would still be, for them, optimal. But if someone has a TSH of, let's say, 3.5, many labs would consider that within the lab range, but it's outside of the optimal range. And similar with the thyroid hormones, T4, T3, there are different units when it comes to these. But in the United States, an optimal range for most labs of free T4, I would say, is between 1 and 1.5. So if someone, let's say, again, we're focusing on here, let's say hypothyroidism. If someone is 0.86, that is less than optimal and they're more towards the hypo side. And again, if someone is like 1.7 and they have a history of hyperthyroidism, to me, that's a little bit on the higher side. And many times we'll see that TSH decreased just because the free T4 is on the higher side. So I would say blood tests, to me, they're important, but obviously symptoms are important too. And if someone, let's say they have optimal thyroid ranges, let's say TSH is 1.2, free T4 is, let's say 1.4 and free T3 is 3.2, and they're still experiencing symptoms like fatigue, brain fog, other symptoms, I would say it might not be related to the thyroid in this situation. It very well might be related to something else. So you want to look at both. You want to look at the thyroid, but obviously if the thyroid is within the optimal ranges and the person is still symptomatic, you might need to look elsewhere. So this next question is from James. So what do you see as the most consistent issue that is at the root cause for Hashimoto's and low thyroid with low T3 and T4? So both T4 and T3 are low. And that is the most important question I can think of. I've come a long way in my journey of healing and recovery, 4 years now clean and sober and working towards total resolution and my body being able to heal itself without taking armor or any other drugs, which is amazing. So keep up the good work, James. I wish I could say that there was just like one main root cause. I have 3 books now related to thyroid health. 2 of them are related to hyperthyroidism, but the one that's related to Hashimoto's is called Hashimoto's Triggers. And it's a pretty big book, over 500 pages. And the reason for that is because there are usually numerous factors that are related. So there's not just one cause. And same thing with Dr. Isabella Wen. She has her root cause book. She has a few books on Hashimoto's. And so I talk about different categories of triggers: food, stress, chemical, infections. And I mean, without question, food can be a big factor. But I will say there are a lot of people who eat a pristine diet, maybe even follow a paleo or AIP, autoimmune paleo diet, and still things are not where they should be. So, I mean, stress could be a big factor. I see stress definitely a big factor in my Graves patients, but also with Hashimoto's too. And then we can't dismiss the impact of environmental toxins in our environment. That's one of the big changes over the last few decades. And it's just getting worse, the exposure to all these chemicals. And I mean, there's infections too. Obviously, we dealt with the virus a number of years ago, and there's bacteria and there's other factors as well. But I would say the food and the environmental toxins are 2 big factors. And a lot of people focus on the diet, which is important. Diet and lifestyle are important, but they don't do enough when it comes to reducing their toxic burden. Yeah, hope you find it helpful. I mean, definitely check out my book if you haven't. It's a comprehensive book, so people find it too overwhelming. That's why I have the podcast. That's why I have articles, even though these days I spend more time on the podcast. But this way you could also keep up to date, because I could update the podcast a lot quicker than I can the book. You know, with the book, every now and then I'll update my books. But anyway, so check out Hashimoto's Triggers if you want. And good thing about Hashimoto's Triggers, you don't have to read it from front to back also. But yeah, I would say those are the areas you want to focus. And if we were going to prioritize those 4 areas, the food, the stress, the chemicals, infections, I mean, again, food and stress, diet and lifestyle to me is always the priority. So those are big. But the environmental toxins, like I said, are oftentimes overlooked. And then, so this question from Kem and Thor, the thyroid. So I was in a health food store last week and I remarked to the cashier that it was funny that they had Herb Farm Thyroid Calming, but couldn't order my Herb Farm Bugleweed for me. He said he'd look into that, but told me iodine without the sodium, that it might be something else that it's not supposed to have. So told me that iodine, I can take it long-term, would regulate the thyroid. Is it true? I mean, a lot of controversy with iodine. And again, I have podcast episodes, articles, and then in my all three books, I talk about it. I have a chapter in my Hashimoto's Triggers book, in my Natural Treatments Solutions for Hyperthyroidism and Graves, which is now in its third edition. So I talk about it there. And then I do talk about it more related to food in my book, The Hyperthyroid Healing Diet. I mean, iodine in some cases, what hyperthyroidism can help. I'm not going to deny that. Again, I'm not anti-iodine. I have had a good experience with iodine in the past. And I was one that took higher doses of iodine years ago. There's potential risk with that. But some doctors do use higher doses of iodine to help lower the thyroid hormones. And in some cases, it could work. Problem is, sometimes it could exacerbate the immune system response. Sometimes it could increase the thyroid hormones, which makes sense because iodine is necessary for thyroid hormone formation. But if you take too much iodine, or if you take a lot of iodine, it could have the opposite effect. And so if you were to work with, let's say, Dr. David Brownstein, who wrote an entire book on iodine, or someone who was trained by Dr. Brownstein, they would probably recommend to take higher doses of iodine. And again, in some cases, that could lower the thyroid hormone levels. But, you know, my issue with that is that that's not the main, like if you read his book, and I love Dr. Brownstein, but you might walk away with the impression that that's the reason why most people have Graves and Hashimoto's, because they're iodine deficient. But I haven't found that to be the case. Again, if someone has any nutrient deficiency, whether it's a mineral or vitamin, eventually you want to address it. But the point is, there are some doctors, that's all they do, but you still want to address the cause of the problem. And usually it's not an iodine deficiency. So again, a lot of controversy over this. And yeah, if you want more information, definitely check out my podcast, episodes that focus on iodine, as well as information I have in my book, or books, I should say. All right, so I'm going to finish up. I've been going about 40 minutes, going to answer a few more questions and then get into, I mentioned, I cover a few questions from those who are already receive radioactive iodine and thyroid surgery, just for those who are maybe considering it, could see some of the potential problems. Again, not saying there's never a time and place for thyroid surgery, but this question is related to hypothyroidism. So how is hypothyroidism related to osteoporosis, scoliosis, GERD, food intolerances, Barrett's esophagus, chronic kidney disease, and the aging process, all of which happened to me in my 70s. All I'll say is that thyroid hormone is important. It affects pretty much every cell and tissue in the body. And if you have low thyroid hormone levels, it can cause a lot of issues. Now, does that mean it's causing all these problems? Not necessarily. I mean, my guess would be it's a factor in many of these, but you could have other imbalances as well. You could have other nutrient deficiencies. Again, when someone has Hashimoto's or Graves or non-autoimmune thyroid condition, what's the underlying cause of the problem? And usually there's multiple factors. And so it's in this case, yes, it looks like you have low thyroid hormone, but what's causing the thyroid hormone? And could some of those causes be responsible for this as well? Like GERD, can you have H. pylori? Maybe you don't, but as an example, can you have H. pylori, which is causing the GERD? And that also can, in some cases, be a factor, a potential trigger when it comes to Graves and Hashimoto's. There is some controversy with H. pylori, and some say that it's not a problem, but I'd say maybe that's not always the case where it's a problem. But then again, this is just an example. You know, if someone has food intolerances, why do they have the food intolerances? They're probably related to the gut. They have a leaky gut. What's causing a leaky gut? So it still comes down to addressing the underlying cause of the problem. All right. So this question is from Rita. Is there a way to reverse thyroid eye disease? What is the best treatment protocol and supplements? It is. It is possible to reverse thyroid eye disease. Again, it depends on the severity of the thyroid eye disease. It doesn't mean that conventional treatment is never necessary, but I do have some podcast episodes, and also Dr. Ronnie Bannick, who was on the podcast. She's an ophthalmologist who also spoke about more of a functional medicine approach. I have some articles on it. I do talk about thyroid eye disease also in my book, Natural Treatment Solutions for Hyperthyroidism Graves' Disease. So I will include some information in the show notes so you can refer to that. But it all comes down to finding and removing triggers, healing the gut, correcting underlying imbalances, because thyroid eye disease, like Graves' disease, is an autoimmune condition. So you need to do things to optimize the health of the immune system. So this question, I've been told that I have a hard time converting T4 to T3. It was recommended that thyroxin be used instead of Armour Thyroid. I currently take 90 milligrams of Armour Thyroid, which a doctor said was too high and not helpful. Is it recommended to stop taking the Armour Thyroid? So thyroxin, like synthetic T4, which, I mean, first of all, I can't make recommendations like this. I can't tell someone to like stop taking their medication, but taking Armour, taking desiccated thyroid shouldn't be the reason why someone has a problem converting T4 to T3. And in fact, if someone were to take thyroxin, like levothyroxin, synthetic T4, that's going to be problematic if they can't convert T4 to T3. So the good thing about the Armour, it has the T3 in there. Whereas if you're just taking T4, either one is not doing anything for the conversion problem. You want to address the conversion problem. Again, I do have some information. I'm not sure if I have a podcast episode dedicated to that. I do have some articles talk about conversion, helping to increase the conversion of T4 to T3. Most of the conversion takes place in the liver, about 60%, about 20% takes place in the gut. So doing things to improve the liver and the gut. And then sometimes adrenals, it could be other factors. But to answer your question, I mean, again, I can't tell you to stop taking Armour Thyroid, but I'm pretty confident that switching from Armour to thyroxin is not going to correct that conversion problem, the T4 to T3 conversion problem. All right. So my question is itching on the skin, especially on the back. Is it a symptom of Graves? I mean, again, I mentioned earlier, like itching and skin conditions, usually you want to look at the gut. I mean, there histamine could be a factor, but even that usually relates to the gut. And I have a chapter in my book, The Hyperthyroid Healing Diet, where I talk about histamine, but I also have at least one episode on the podcast where I talk about histamine. I think even multiple episodes. And then also same thing on the website, naturalendocrinesolutions.com. So this question is from Myra. So if my T3, T4, TSH levels are good, how come the TSI and thyroid peroxidase antibodies are high? And what does this mean? What can I do to get these numbers down? I currently have hyperthyroidism and I've had it since 2011. So Myra, I mean, it's great that your numbers are good. Now, again, there's a difference between within the lab reference range and being optimal. So are they optimal? I'm not sure because you didn't share the numbers. But either way, if the TSI, which is thyroid stimulating immunoglobulins, those are the antibodies associated with Graves. And then we have the TPO or thyroid peroxidase antibodies, which are common with both Graves and Hashimoto's. I mean, that pretty much when you have those, one or both of those elevated, regardless of what the thyroid hormone levels are showing, you have autoimmunity. I mean, there's autoimmune components. And so you want to find, remove the triggers, heal the gut, correct the underlying imbalances. I know I already mentioned that, but really that's what it comes down to doing. Again, I talk about this in different episodes. I do have an episode, this one I remember because it's number 50. So if you visit savemythyroid.com/50, that's an episode on lowering thyroid antibodies. So you might want to check that out. And again, I have other episodes on the podcast about finding, removing triggers, which help with the antibodies. Same thing on my website, naturalendocrinesolutions.com. And then the books. The books are also about addressing the cause of the problem, which include normalizing the antibodies. Again, it's not easy necessarily to do that, but when it comes to dealing with not only Graves' disease, but Hashimoto's, that's a big thing you want to do. You want to try to do things to lower and eventually normalize the antibodies. So Monica has this question, is avoiding gluten harmful to your health if you're non-celiac or harmful to your heart health? She included a 2017 study that seems to conclude that there very well may be a risk. Yeah, I mean, I can't say I'm an expert when it comes to the effects of gluten on cardiovascular health, but from a gut standpoint, a gastrointestinal standpoint, if you don't have celiac disease, and even if you don't have non-celiac gluten sensitivity, gluten can still have a negative effect on the gut health. So when someone is working with me, I'm going to recommend to avoid gluten, even if we know they don't have celiac disease. I would still say, take a break from gluten while healing. I mean, there's an argument to permanently avoid gluten in all situations if you have an autoimmune condition. I mean, really, period. Nobody really needs gluten. So I would say, yes, it could be potential. Again, not so much, I don't know, with the heart health, but to your gut and just overall could be inflammatory. So it wouldn't be a shocker if it also can have a negative effect on the heart. But usually I'm recommending for people to avoid gluten because of the impact on the gut, and especially those with Graves and Hashimoto's, those are immune system conditions, and most of the immune system cells are located in the gut. So you need a healthy gut to have a healthy immune system. Okay, and this question, does red light therapy help or harm the hyperthyroid nodules? And what about castor oil packs for shrinking nodules? This is from Linda. So someone earlier mentioned that they use castor oil packs for the nodules and it didn't help. I have on the podcast, Carrie Vitt, so I could include that information. I mean, it might be worth a try, but the thing about castor oil packs, it's not addressing the cause of the problem. It's not, if someone has insulin resistance or problems with estrogen metabolism, then castor oil packs won't address those causes. So either way, even if you're going to try castor oil packs, I would say you still want to address the cause of the problem. Red light therapy, I can't say I have a lot of experience, even though I have a red light unit. It's not like I recommend red light therapy to most of my patients with hyperthyroidism. And so I can't say I have seen anything showing that it would harm the nodules and the like thyroid nodules and those with hyperthyroidism. Now, I'm not sure how much it would help either, because again, you want to address the cause of the problem. So I like red light therapy. Again, I have a red light therapy unit, but for the sake of helping people with thyroid nodules, it's not something that I've recommended. Nothing in the literature, as far as I know, helping or harming. So it's just one of those things, I think, for other benefits. And there's a great book, Ari Whitten, Red Light Therapy. Again, I don't think he has anything specific on nodules, let alone those with hyperthyroidism who have nodules. So I am going to now... Oh, actually, there's one other question I wanted to mention. So Carol asked, what can you say about ashwagandha for hypothyroidism and Hashimoto? So I'll answer this and then I'll go into some of the other questions and then wrap things up. Because again, the purpose of this Q&A, most of the Q&A episodes, of course, are like 5-10 minutes. So with the Q&A, when I answer multiple questions, I'm willing to go longer, but still trying to keep it less than an hour. And so Carol says, what can you say about ashwagandha for hypothyroidism and or Hashimoto's? And we could ask that question for hyperthyroidism. And I do have an episode on the podcast, so I'll make sure to include that. I will say that ashwagandha is a member of the nightshade family. So if someone's trying to strictly avoid nightshades, they might want to avoid ashwagandha. I do like ashwagandha. I mean, it supports the HPA axis, which is the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, can support the hypothalamic pituitary thyroid axis. Because of that, because it affects the thyroid, it can cause mild hyperthyroidism, which if someone already has hyperthyroidism, it's not a good thing, of course. Now, again, a lot of people with hyperthyroidism can tolerate ashwagandha, especially if it's in a formula that has other ingredients. But if they're taking it by itself, it's more likely to cause problems. Like if someone's taking an ashwagandha supplement separately that has 500 milligrams of ashwagandha, and if they have hyperthyroidism, again, it doesn't mean it will definitely increase the hyperthyroidism, but greater risk. But again, check out the podcast episode on ashwagandha. And then again, I do have, I believe, at least one article on ashwagandha as well. So we're going to get to a few questions from those who already received either radioactive iodine or surgery. And again, I'm doing this so people... just you could see some of the questions people have who have already received these treatment options. So my endocrinologist recently closed his office and I was left with many unanswered questions. I was diagnosed with Graves' disease about 4 years ago, had my thyroid ablation done with the radioactive iodine pill. After the second attempt, it worked. After that, I was given levothyroxine 150 micrograms. Do I have to take this medication for life? Is there a natural method option other than levothyroxine? I would love to look at other alternatives if possible, but I don't know who to ask. And this is from Tanya. So Tanya, thanks for the question. And that's the concern when someone receives radioactive iodine and you receive a couple of treatments because the first treatment didn't work, especially with a complete thyroidectomy. I mean, complete thyroidectomy, you definitely need thyroid hormone replacement. Radioactive iodine, again, usually you do as well. And as far as natural options, so there's no herb that will replace, like for those with hyperthyroidism, they could take Bugleweed, and a lot of times that'll work instead of antithyroid medication. But levothyroxine is a hormone. Now you could look into, you could speak with a practitioner about taking desiccated thyroid, which is more natural. So that has T4, T3, T1, T2. But either way, there's a good chance you will need to take thyroid hormone replacement. And there has been people with radioactive iodine who was able to get off of it. And that's not something I focus on. Most of the people I see, I'm trying to prevent them from receiving radioactive iodine or thyroid surgery. So I can't say that my specialty is seeing patients who have already received radioactive iodine and getting them off of the thyroid hormone that they're taking. Usually when I see someone who received radioactive iodine or thyroid surgery, I'm doing things to optimize their immune system. For example, they had Graves' disease and received a thyroidectomy or radioactive iodine. I'm not trying to get them to the point where they don't need thyroid hormone replacement. It's just trying to address the underlying imbalances and find and remove the triggers that were never addressed in the first place. And then Kim has this question. If someone gets their thyroid treated with radioactive iodine for Graves and then takes levothyroxine for life and does nothing to treat the root cause, assuming the autoantibodies are still present, what other types of damage can Graves antibodies cause? What other tissues can they damage other than the thyroid? I mean, the Graves antibodies, as far as we know, they also can cause thyroid eye disease, which is the TSI, thyroid-stimulating immunoglobulins, can attack the tissues of the eyes, which is why there's a concern when someone with Graves receives radioactive iodine, even if they don't have thyroid eye disease symptoms, sometimes it's underlying. I don't know if damage it could do to other causes of the body, but the concern when you have a condition such as, let's say, Graves, and you receive radioactive iodine or thyroid surgery, it's not doing anything to improve the immune system health. You're not doing anything for the immune system. So you are at greater risk of developing other autoimmune conditions in the future. So I'm not concerned necessarily about the Graves antibodies specifically when someone gets radioactive iodine. Again, I am concerned that they might develop thyroid eye disease. But another concern is that they very well might develop other autoimmune conditions in the future, which in some cases could be even worse than an autoimmune condition such as Graves, arguably, like conditions such as like MS, multiple sclerosis, and other autoimmune conditions. So that is one of the big concerns. So this question, about 28 years ago, I was given radioactive iodine. At the time, my thyroid was hyperactive, but there had been times before that it was hypoactive. I was told that I had thyroiditis, but after giving radiation treatment, within 3 months, my thyroid quit working and I had to start taking Synthroid, and it took months to get stable, but I haven't felt the same since. I now have had allergies, it seems, to everything, especially food, which includes dairy, gluten. I'm so sensitive to medications, it's so hard to take anything. I struggle with vitamin D and B12 deficiency, and I swell and stay puffy in my face all the time. Do you have any suggestions? It's been a lot of years being miserable, and I totally regret taking the radioactive iodine. I wish I wouldn't have. And this is from Sherry. So Sherry, thanks for sharing. I'm so sorry that you're experiencing this. And again, this is another reason. I know that there's a time and place for conventional treatment. Again, I talk about if I had to choose, I probably would choose surgery over radioactive iodine. But again, even that should be like an absolute last resort. And this is one of the reasons why, like Sherry, just not feeling well, just taking Synthroid. And again, that I will say some people, they do better on desiccated thyroid than Synthroid. I'm not saying that's the reason why you're feeling bad, but something to consider. Some people take Synthroid, which is synthetic T4. And so maybe talking to your doctor about desiccated thyroid, which is more natural, and just addressing the cause of the problem is what I would say. Just there's nothing, like you can't undo the radioactive iodine, the effects the radioactive iodine had on your thyroid, especially, and not to mention maybe even on other areas of your body. But you want to find or remove triggers. You want to heal the gut. You want to optimize adrenals, reduce your toxic burden. So even though you do need to be on thyroid hormone replacement long-term, you still want to do things to improve your overall health, which of course is something that they don't do when they give radioactive iodine. They just give it and then they have the person take thyroid hormone replacement and that is it. So I will say that to anybody listening to this, if you've received radioactive iodine or thyroid surgery, again, we can't undo those procedures, but that doesn't mean that you can't do other things to optimize your health. And then Jackie here says, I am Graves' hypothyroid post-ablation. The ablation was incomplete and the shift has been slow. I spent a year euthyroid, which means normal thyroid hormones. I'm now taking levothyroxine 88 micrograms daily. My weight is now climbing in spite of calorie reduction and intermittent fasting. I'm confused which recommendations I should follow for dieting and supplementation, hyperactive or hypoactive protocols. So again, I mean, you're more hypo right now. That's why you're taking the levothyroxine, and that's for symptom management. That's what you should be doing. Again, should you be taking levothyroxine or desiccated thyroid? Again, that's ultimately up to you, but you wouldn't want to take anything anti-thyroid, so anything that lowers thyroid hormones, because again, you got the ablation, you were euthyroid, but then became hypothyroid. But once again, as I mentioned for a number of different people, it sounds like you need to address the cause of the problem. I mean, it's great that you've been doing things with the diet and intermittent fasting can be beneficial, but improving health of the gut microbiome, the adrenals. So like you said, your weight is now climbing. So what's the cause of it? Maybe your thyroid hormones are optimal with you being on levothyroxine. Again, maybe they're not. Maybe they're within the lab range, but not optimal range. So you need to consider that. But you also need to consider, do you have any blood sugar imbalances? Do you have problems with estrogen metabolism? That could cause problems with weight gain. Well, I mentioned insulin resistance, blood sugar imbalances, even increased toxic burden, problems with the gut microbiome can make it difficult to lose weight. So just as I mentioned a few times here, you want to do things to find or remove triggers, heal the gut, correct underlying imbalances. Again, this is what this podcast is all about. Not this specific episode. I'm just answering questions, but you might ask, and others might ask, well, what do I need to do to find or remove the triggers, correct underlying imbalances, heal the gut? And it's, again, I talk about that in different episodes myself sometimes. Then I have guests as well. And then my books. That's why I have the books. So definitely for those with hyperthyroidism, check out my two books on hyperthyroidism. And for Hashimoto's, check out my book, Hashimoto's Triggers. And in your case, for someone who had Graves and then received reactive iodine or thyroid surgery, I would still say like natural treatment solutions for hyperthyroidism and Graves, but also Hashimoto's Triggers, because that focuses on finding, removing triggers and healing the gut. So I would say that either one of those or both of those can benefit you. And then, so this will be, I think, the final question here from Augusta. Says, thanks for your updates and mails. Quite appreciate it. And then I had a thyroidectomy surgery 3 years ago. Last year, I was told that I have an underactive thyroid. Noticed recently that my weight has dropped to a noticeable extent. What should I do? So again, she had a complete thyroidectomy. Not a surprise that after the surgery, you are underactive, had a low thyroid because you no longer have a thyroid, but then your weight has dropped. So that's usually the opposite. When someone doesn't have a thyroid, they're taking thyroid hormone replacement, but still a lot of times they're gaining weight and you're losing weight. So I guess a few things. One, I would just make sure you're not on too much thyroid hormones, which your doctor hopefully does regular blood tests. So that could be a possibility. But then I would look into gut issues. If like your thyroid hormone is optimal, like your TSH, thyroid hormones are looking good on a blood test, then you're still losing weight, I would look into the gut. Do you have some type of malabsorption problem, whether it's SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or parasites? And you might need to do testing outside of a regular lab, because if you just go to a regular lab, like a basic lab, they'll just do a very basic stool test, which many times will look good, won't be positive, yet you still might have issues. So yeah, I would recommend working with someone who has experience dealing with gut issues. And again, you can see a gastroenterologist as well, but seeing a gastroenterologist, you also probably won't get the answers that you need. So of course, I'm going to be biased and say to work with a functional medicine practitioner. And so that is it. So again, thank you for everyone who submitted questions. I do apologize that I couldn't get to all of them. Again, my goal was to try to keep it to roughly an hour. I mean, ideally, I wanted to keep it less than an hour. But we got a lot of questions, and if I answered all of them, it would be a lot longer. And in the past, I've split. Sometimes I'll split it up and do multiple episodes, but I try to do these every few months. I don't want to have like 2 or 3 weeks in a row of just answering questions. So, what I would say, if you didn't get your question answered during this episode, there's a few options. One is you could tune in live on Facebook at least once or twice a month. I try to go live on Facebook to answer questions. Usually it's on a Friday about 1 p.m. Eastern time. And then if you're not on Facebook, if you're not available at the time, I do live events every so often. I've had 2 live events this year in January. A 5-day accelerated thyroid healing challenge. So 5 days, and every day I answer questions, and a lot of questions. And then in March of this year, I had a hyperthyroid healing diet challenge, which also was 5 days. And so I should have at least a few more of these events this year. I'm not sure when the next one will be, but just always keep an eye. If you're on my email list, which if you're not on my email list, then visit savemythyroid.com. And then there should be an opt-in where you could just get on my email list, or even my other website, naturalendocrinesolutions.com, where you can get on the list. And this way you get informed when I go live on Facebook, or again, I have a live event. So again, I tried my best to answer as many questions as I can that I think would benefit a lot of people. There, when someone asks a question that might only benefit them, I'm less likely to answer it, just because, again, I want to have a positive impact on as many people as I can. But like I said, if you have a specific question to you, maybe pop in on Facebook or tune into one of my live events. But that is it. I'm going to end the episode here. Hope you found it to be valuable. And as usual, look forward to catching you in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Save My Thyroid podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure you hit subscribe to stay up to date on the latest thyroid health-related topics. And to get your free thyroid and immune health restoration action points checklist, visit SaveMyThyroidChecklist.com. Thanks so much for tuning in.
I want to let you know about a product called Hepatoimmune Supreme, which is a unique supplement that has a rare combination of N-acetylcysteine, also known as NAC, milk thistle, and schisandra to support the liver. And it also has a few mushrooms that can help support the immune system, including cordyceps, which has both immune modulating and adaptogenic properties and is great for those with Graves' disease and Hashimoto's. To learn more about Hepatoimmune Supreme, visit SaveMyThyroid.com/liver support.